Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee and co-host of the program with the musically inclined Bruce Miller, editor of the Sioux City Journal and a longtime entertainment reporter. Crazy.
Yes, I love that. And then I fall to pieces. Okay, you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Patsy Cline, right?
The one and only Patsy Cline. Now, what do you know about Patsy Cline? Anything?
I know she is one of the more well-renowned country musicians of all time. I also know that I don't really listen to Patsy Cline, so I don't, like, I know Crazy, but I don't have a deep, intimate knowledge of her catalog.
Well, and most people probably don't, because she only lived to be 30. She was killed in a crash. She is often considered an inspiration for a lot of musicians today. When they talk about who do you look up to or who was a role model for you, who was a great singer that you really admired, Patsy's name is the one that comes to the forefront, because she was able to kind of sell a song and put the emotion in it that that's what they want to do. And so if you ask, they'll say Patsy Cline. Well, Patsy is now being tributed by a number of artists. There's a special coming on PBS on Great Performances about Patsy Cline, where they'll sing her songs. But, you know, if you really want the true story about her, you should go to the Patsy Cline Museum in Nashville, because it does tell the story. But also, I got a great chance to talk with her daughter, Julie Fudge. Now, Julie was just a kid, like 4 years old when her mother died. But she was left kind of the keys to the kingdom and was told, all right, it's up to you to keep the memory alive. And it's interesting how she looks at all of this. She had a different view of the whole world. You'll listen in the interview. I said, well, she was really Taylor Swift before Taylor Swift, because she wasn't looking for a career in country music specifically. It's what happened to her in the course of creating this bigger career. I asked Julie these questions. Here's a chance for you to hear Julie Fudge talking about her mother, Patsy Cline. Do you sing?
There's a difference between do and can. And I don't.
Okay. Okay. You know, wouldn't everybody think that it's obvious?
Well, there's a list. I can count on one hand your top five questions.
Okay.
And that's one of them.
Well, let's have the other four.
Right? Well, I mean, it's like, how old were you when your mom died?
And you were very little.
4 and a half. My brother was 2. What's your favorite song?
Crazy.
That's too easy.
Oh, too easy. No. Okay.
No, I remember as a child, one of the ones that I really liked listening to was You Belong to Me.
Okay.
The standards.
Sure.
They tend to be my favorites, the old standards, which it seems that were mom's favorites.
Sure.
Because she would listen to torch singers.
Sure.
Joe Stafford, Roberta Sherwood, Della Reese, you know.
She actually was Taylor Swift before Taylor Swift. You know, she had this country career, but then she wanted to move.
Not to interrupt, but I think that's true. I just didn't know how to say that before.
Yeah.
I was thinking of a question that someone had asked, and it was something about today's country and what she would listen to. And I thought for a minute, I thought, would she even be considered country today?
I don't think so.
She would probably have been pop.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
What are your memories then of her? What can I remember from that age?
Yeah. Well, the difference is, and the advantage that I've had, is the blessing of audio, visual, and the stories, all the little puzzle pieces that I have gathered over the year that correspond to those memories, that validate the memories that I had. Growing up around her mother and her siblings, and in her, basically her home, when I lived with my grandmother.
Sure.
That's where she grew up. And so I feel like I got a lot of her without her being here.
Do you take comfort in the fact that you have all of this music that you can listen to I always find, because I don't have my mother anymore, that I should have tape recorded her voice so I could hear her voice and it would come back to me.
Yes. And that is something when you lose something, when you lose someone, is the fear of not being able to remember. And even like my children, my grandchildren, they would never have known what she sounded like,
sure,
or what she looked like, or anything like that. And that's a big thing to deal with. But having seen audio and visual, not to mention the music, has been such a blessing. I just can't get over the blessing. In fact, in the past few years, it's been a few years, but as an adult, as a grandparent, one of my favorite moments was the first time I actually sat and listened to the entire performance, audio recording of the Arthur Godfrey show.
Oh, wow.
Where she wins the talent competition, which was very much like today's American Idol.
Sure.
And to hear her voice and to hear the excitement, to hear her say how much this meant to her, that choked me up. And I've gotten kind of jaded over the years, I hate to say.
Sure.
That you just become used to the fact that your mother's gone, that people know she died as in an accident, and you just kind of move on. But to hear that moment, it made me take it personally again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is it to keep, you know, I'm sure they just assume that you will keep the legacy alive. Is that okay? Or is that something like, I don't want that burden?
It was just kind of something I got. It's kind of, I guess, much like a farm. Yeah. Yeah. You got it. It's yours. I think I kind of fell into that. My siblings, I have one full brother, my mother's son, and then I have a half brother, my father's. And they work with me. We're a team. We're a trio that represent Patsy Cline and everything that encompasses that. But at the same time, I took on the desk job, you might say.
Okay.
Because I tended to be around Dad a lot and to be around the business a lot. I'm the oldest sibling.
Sure.
And I took more of that interest. It seemed just natural, but I did not realize how much work he did.
It isn't just another singer that you're dealing with.
Right.
You know, I mean, there are many who have passed and you go.
A lot of people are not, no disrespect, but they're not revered or they don't have a legacy.
She certainly has a place that you cannot deny.
Right, right.
And so there's a little more there that you have to watch.
Yes.
What did you get, though, from her? I mean, are there tangible things? Did you get fur coats from her? Do you keep that stuff, or what do you do with it?
A lot of...
In a museum?
Well, there's a few in a museum. And it's not a large museum, but it's a very nice museum. It's very well done. And I'm very thankful for that opportunity. But that's a common misconception, is that Patsy had all these things. When in reality, 10 months before she died, she was able to put a down payment on the house.
Oh, wow.
And because she could do that, because she had just begun to see a little bit of profit from her work. During that 10 months that she lived in that house, we picked out furniture. We brought old furniture that she had always had. They still had the stereo they had bought when they got married. They still had the television. They had one window unit air conditioner from where they were in another house. They bought one more for this new four-bedroom house. They had all their records. They had bedroom suit. I got a new bedroom suit. My brother got a new bedroom suit.
Oh, wow.
The old furniture went in the rec room. The new furniture went in the living room. But it was just a normal house. Okay, so you've got this normal house, and you've got her with a house note and a car note, and she's just moved into the new house, and we're getting it set up the way she wants it. And she's traveling, and she's recording, and she gets 35 days work in Las Vegas that starts in November and goes to New Year's. So there were no holidays in that home.
Sure.
There were no Christmas trees. We were with our grandmother during that time and visited Las Vegas. And by the time March rolls around and she's gone, now she's a deceased girl singer who's had a couple of good records. And I go home to the old hometown with her mother and my little brother. And Dad goes back to work. So he has a house note to pay. There's a little bit of recognition there, but there's no more new music.
Oh, wow.
There's nothing to fall back on. The only coat that she, you would call a fur, she had gotten a really nice black swing coat with a fur collar.
Oh, wow.
It had been stolen in during the convention time in Nashville, like October.
Oh.
She was irate about it. Insurance covered it. But the coat did not come until after she passed.
Oh, God.
So the coat that she had is
she never got.
She, her jewelry, she had her her wedding ring. And she had this ring.
That's her ring?
This is her ring, which is actually...
It's Black Hills Gold.
It's Black Hills Gold. That's as expensive as it gets.
Really?
And that was from an admirer. So there are no riches.
So there wasn't like a lot of stuff that you could stick around.
No. Now, once my dad passed, after my dad remarried.
Is your dad Charlie?
Yes.
Okay.
And the movies do not do Charlie justice one way or the other. Charlie was very kind, just a wonderful, fun person.
Sure.
He was witty and he was an excellent businessman. He's been recognized for that. He had a normal home when we reestablished our family unit, when he remarried, we moved into a different house. We didn't keep all the new furniture. We sold some of that, kept our bedroom suits, kept the den set, kept the kitchen table and the dining room table, a few things like that. And he did keep a few things around simply because they used to, you know, he's from the generation, you don't throw things away.
Sure.
So we still had the stereo was the same and the TV until we got
a new one,
a different one, right. So he didn't get rid of a lot of things, but he lived to be 81. And then when he did pass, we had whatever he had there. A lot of it was from as far back as the 50s when they married. Some of it was from the 60s because... If you had a dining room table, why not keep using
it? It's forever.
It's just things we grew up with
in
the family. It wasn't preserved or boxed up or anything. And so when it came time to empty his house, we had had an opportunity to speak with someone who wanted to open something downtown. He had considered a honky-tonk.
Sure.
But I didn't want to jump right into a honky-tonk
right
after I take over.
Right.
So I said, I don't think that's for us. But he said, have you ever thought about a museum? And I even had notes from Dad, you know, where he said, they know we don't have stuff for a museum. But now Dad's gone. So we wouldn't be taking things away from his living space. So the awards would now have a place, the furniture.
And they still exist. I mean,
they still exist. They're beautifully displayed in Nashville. Gentleman named Bill Miller, who had already opened the Johnny Cash Museum in Nashville. He's originally from California. He had been there for a few years, and he had a second floor. And he's like, I thought about maybe a museum. So he came out to the house, and he said, I think we can do this. So with our cooperation, and now I have a place to lovingly store my possessions. And he worked with a group called Celebrating Patsy Cline, who takes care of the historic house in her hometown, and a few other collectors between here and Europe. He was able to gather several of the costumes that she had.
Good, good.
We had the dining room set up. We have some props from Sweet Dreams. Some clothing from Sweet Dreams. All of her music that was released is displayed. A lot of her handwritten notes, song lyrics.
Did she write you a note ever? Was there a birthday card or?
I'm sure that I have something. I have my birth announcement, things like that. My baby book.
Okay.
I have my baby book. So that's rather special.
Yeah.
Their wedding album is on display, and it's available digitally. You can look at every page, her scrapbook.
Okay. From my perspective, I see her that she was a feisty woman.
Yes.
Is that a good term to identify her, or is that like, no, that's just, you've seen that in movies or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I do believe that she was feisty. She was a little more forward than maybe even I was. I was a little more retiring. It's very odd that I'm in this position now. It really is. But she was just the kind of person that was a doer.
Sure.
As she grew up, she knew, you know, they didn't have a great life growing up, and she and her mom were doers. Her mother was that way.
Well, that she was so forward to just ask, I want to be on the Grand Ole Opry.
Come exactly. On. She's the only person to ever get membership in the Grand Ole Opry simply by asking, because you're usually invited.
Would you think of that?
Well, she just said, you know, I want to be a member of the Grand Ole Opry, and they said, okay.
Okay, then. This idea that I have of her in the evening gowns and all that, you know, where you go away from being the country singer.
Right.
Where did that come from? Where did she, was she like saying, you know, I've got to move it into a different realm because country isn't that big?
Well,
or?
Personally, when I think about that, I'm thinking of the thought process that she was doing different shows now. She was also the first female country solo artist to have performed at the Hollywood Bowl and Carnegie Hall. You know, those are great, and it was the Grand Ole Opry going to Carnegie Hall. But it's New York, and it's a little different.
Well, you don't want to be seen as the hick.
Yes, and nobody liked for Nashville to be the hay bale capital, you know.
Comes hee-haw.
Right,
exactly. You know it.
And then, of course, she was the first female country singer to headline her own show in Las Vegas. Of course, back then it was a lounge act, but
yeah, I know, but
that was the beginning. Yeah. So, yeah, you had to have a little different appeal.
Did you, I'm sure you have, talk with those who were her friends, and what did they say to you about her? Like, we always hear about Loretta. Tight with her.
Yes.
Do they give you little clues about what mom was like?
I think part of that is part of what I'm surrounded with, where I kind of live in her world. Dottie West was a friend, and I would go to Dottie's house, and Dottie would come to our house, and just knowing them and their appreciation and how they treat me just reveals a lot of concern and camaraderie in there. The way people talk about her, whoever that is.
Yeah.
Close friends that people may not know in the general public, but I knew them, musicians and things like that, and little stories that they had. You just kind of get an overall picture, and they're all little pieces of a puzzle.
Sure. Does it come together? Do you get the picture?
It does. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
To be around one person and have them say, I remember this, and then to be around somebody else and say, well, she did this, and it does. It all creates a picture.
When you, I'm sure your life has been entirely different than what hers was.
A little, yeah.
But would you say, I don't know that I would have had that kind of fortitude to do what she did.
Well, I know that I was not, there's something, speaking of do you sing or not, there's something more to doing what she did than just being able to sing. That's the difference between me and somebody else. When I was growing up, the country music singer Lori Morgan, the country music singer Pam Tillis, all those are kind of my peers.
Sure.
Same generation. They grew up around a lot more music than I did, because from 4 years old, I was just another kid in the neighborhood. And for them, they were at the Opry on Saturday night watching their parents perform and things like that. So you are a product of what you do. I just never had the nerve, I think.
Do they try to put you and your brother in some kind of music thing? Did anybody do that?
We always knew that. I think one time Dad had said, if you ever wanted to, but it was in passing. Maybe we were talking about music, or maybe we were, you know, or maybe we were humming in a car. But no, I was never attempted to be groomed or anything like that. In fact, I did not hang out with Dad as much in his job. His job was in promotion. And it was very few and far between that he would say, hey, you want to go with me to a session where he worked? They were recording somebody, and I would get to go for just a minute and meet the singer, Frank Gorshin.
Oh, yeah, the Riddler.
The Riddler.
Yeah.
I have a picture with him.
That was the ultimate.
Right. I mean, I did not get a picture, but the company Dad worked for in the 70s, James Brown. Dad hung out with James Brown, took him out on a boat ride.
Thanks, Dad.
I know, and I never got to see him, you know. Dad would travel and meet people, and he would call me and say, you know, we're sitting here interviewing this guy, and he belongs to some rock group.
You might have heard of him.
Right? Yes, and I'm going, well, what's his name? He said, I don't know, he's with the Rolling Rocks or something. And he was sitting there talking to one of the Skulls, yeah. And I'm like, thanks, Dad.
Yeah. That's what a dad's for, right?
Right.
What do you think your mom would make of all? I mean, because there's a lot.
Yes.
Would she just be thrilled to hear all this?
I'm sure she would be thrilled. I'm sure she would be immensely honored. I think she would be astonished. I think this would all be so amazing to her. I mean, it's amazing to us.
Right.
Now,
do you think she'd still be working today?
I'd like to think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. Because, you know, much like a lot of her peers, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, look at the people who are in the Opry who are still hosting on a night and were her peers.
Yes. And as long as the Opry's in Nashville, then, and as long as they're capable, I'm happy to see the older guard be there.
Did she do a movie? You know how they used to do those kind of combo things where they just perform and then they...
Yeah, I don't think she ever did. There was talk one time of something that went on in Florida where they were going to make a movie, and Dottie and she were down there, and I think Farron Young. There were a few of them, but I don't think it ever got off the ground, and I don't think that was a story my dad knew more about than I did.
Sure.
But I don't think it ever legitimized at all. So I don't know that there was ever any footage or script or anything like that.
But see, she could have done that.
Well, you know, that was the general. At that time, there were country music artists doing things like that. Even if they were obscure, they were doing those things.
Do you look at Beverly's performance as she's kind of the ultimate performer who did your mom? Or are there others, too, that you say, she was pretty good, too.
Well, the two movies, Beverly played her in Coal Miner's Daughter and Jessica Lange in Sweet Dreams.
Right.
And I've always said, people will say, what did you think about Sweet Dreams? And I'm like, well, I think the actors did a great job with what they had to work with because they didn't have anybody to work with. They had word of mouth and a script. I don't believe half of what was in Sweet Dreams.
Sure.
I know for a fact a lot of it, but I know that it was Hollywood. And at that time, I don't think Dad quite had a handle on that kind of an avenue. It was new.
Sure.
So I don't think he felt like he had as much control. But as far as Beverly, she is a fan favorite.
Good.
Most people will acknowledge her Patsy. No offense at all.
No.
But they'll acknowledge their favorite was Beverly. And I think she did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, and this is a really crass question, so forgive me for asking.
Okay.
But does she still make money? Do you still get residuals, or is it such that the contracts were written in the day that doesn't exist?
I see these crazy articles, these crazy put-together articles. No offense to journalism.
No.
But I've seen these clickbait articles on the richest.
You won't believe, but.
Right. The 10 richest country music stars of all time.
Right.
Things like that. And they'll say things like, when she passed away, she was worth $10 million. Well, that's a crock. Like I said, Dad went to work, paid for the house. You know, nobody was buying me, you know, fur coats and jewels. So, you know, people don't understand that. They think if you were in that family that you've got it easy.
Right.
You know. Now, I will admit that when the 80s came along and the movies came out, there was a surge in her music. There was a surge in interest. And she was able to go from, her greatest hits was released in 1967. And between 1967 and like 2005, it sold 10 million records.
Oh my God.
But that's a long time to sell records.
Yeah.
And it's been over 50, it's been almost 20 years since that count. And with digital downloads and so forth, it has not made another million. You also have to remember that, I mean, that's wonderful. That is an accolade that is amazing. But she might have been getting a penny a record.
Yeah. See, that's the thing.
Yeah.
How poorly those contracts are written in those days that you really wouldn't get anything,
right.
So it wouldn't amount to anything.
Well, that's just it.
And I apologize for asking.
No, this, I totally understand, and I appreciate the opportunity, which you don't get often, to even address the plan. I will say this, because of the sales of her records and the interest, there's no yachts.
Yeah.
There's no condos in Hawaii.
No.
But my father and my brother and I were the beneficiaries of her legacy. And simple things. My husband worked 34 years for Freightline, and I was able to stay home. I was able to be at home with my kids, and I was able to send them to a little neighborhood Christian school that I wanted to send them to. So we're not talking millions,
right.
But we're talking what Mom had said. She just wanted to live good. So she made life easier for us.
Yeah.
And that's the best part.
But you got the boys.
Well,
that's the
ultimate.
Yeah. I mean,
Patsy
is one of my favorites. She really is. And I play those albums when I want to feel something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But God bless her. God bless her. I wish I had met her. I think I would have had a great time with her.
I think so. I think she was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And knowing my dad and knowing the family, I think they were just a combination that fit. She was very independent, and he was okay with that. They worked on things together.
Sure.
My dad's brother said something one time that really stuck with us. And he said, there was something about Patsy and Charlie. He said, if Patsy had said, hey, let's go for a ride in the country, he'd have said, okay, let's go. And he'd have gotten the car and they'd have gone. They were both just uninhibited.
I love it.
To enjoy life.
Thanks, Bruce, for that interview. Always fascinating to hear about someone famous like Patsy Cline from a relative like that. Her daughter provided a lot of insight there, which was good to hear.
Yeah, it's often the ones who know the most story don't always do the talking. I am open and ready to talk because I went to see Wicked.
Wicked.
Have we been holding our tongue on this one for how long, right?
Right, right.
I mean, it is glutted. Everywhere you look, Wicked is everywhere. And I finally got to see the film, and I'll tell you, it's a lot of money on the screen. You look and you say, oh my God, those sets are incredible. The costumes are incredible. The actors are incredible. They've expanded the story. And if you're a OG Wicked fan, you get to see Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth. They are not cut out of the picture. So there's your kind of little heads up with your friends. They're in it. But they're not playing Elphaba and Galinda. They're somewhere else. And I don't want to spoil the fun for you, but they do have a great way of referencing the Broadway version and how they actually got along on that. I mean, they spoof it on their little segment of this movie. Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande have the roles that they had originally, and they do a marvelous job. In fact, I think Ariana Grande is doing the best Kristen Chenoweth impersonation I've ever seen. She's really good at getting even the hair flips, the kicks, the vocal tics, all of that stuff. And I'm sure that wasn't her goal, was to try and be exactly like Kristen, but you won't feel cheated when you watch her performance. But it isn't like it's an imitation. It is more of an homage.
If anything, some of the numbers go on too long. That's my only complaint about it. They play out the story in a grander scale. There are things that you probably didn't get in the play, but you will get in the film version. But it's only half the film. You're only getting half of it until next year. The second half or the second act comes next November. And I think that is a real strike against it, because this isn't Lord of the Rings. You know, it doesn't need to be stretched out that much. But I do think they want to make their money off it. And so that's why they split it. And I do think that it'll become a Universal Studios land or destination. I can just see with that new epic adventure area of Universal Studios in Orlando, they'll have suddenly Oz will be part of it. And you can walk around the sets because they are, you do want to. You look at it and you think it's so cool. But I think it's one of those films that lives up to what the hype was. It's almost 3 hours long. It does, if you're a newbie to all of this and you're not a Wicked fan, it might take a little out of you.
Until you had mentioned that this is part one of two, I didn't realize that it was actually being split into two movies. And that really disappoints me because I've seen the musical. I didn't see the original version on Broadway, but I saw the traveling version that comes to city to city, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, a Broadway show, they typically clock in between 2 and 3 hours. And I always feel like that's a good amount of time to spend on something.
That's one act with this.
Right. And I don't, you're like, man, 3 hours for this. And then I've got to come back for 3 hours for something else. And that's going to be a little bit of a tough sell. We're going to see this. I mean, this has been one that's been on the calendar for the family since we heard it was coming. So we are excited to see it, but I am a little disappointed. I guess that it is going to be two movies.
Yeah. It's a lot. Interesting that the concession stand, they were selling pillows, Wicked pillows. Oh. So I don't know if you're supposed to have a nap at some point in the middle of it, because there is no permission. I did doze off in one small spot. And I don't think that Jeff Goldblum is made for singing.
Yeah, I can see that.
But you know what? By the time you're in and you're kind of fighting it, you go, okay, I give up. I am truly giving into this, and it is this year's Barbie.
Wicked, of course, is a prequel to The Wizard of Oz. There have been several attempts at doing other types of movies. There was that one, I can't even remember what it was called, but it was supposed to take place after The Wizard of Oz, and it was very strange. They had the Wheelers, the Wheelies, whatever they were called.
You know, he wrote a lot of books. L. Frank Baum, a lot of books. But now Michael McGuire, who wrote this Wicked version, he has a series of books too. So just know that if you wanted to know more about the characters and what happens, there are other things to look at. This is kind of the best possible prequel because it does give you something about friendship, and it does talk about standing up for somebody else. I mean, it has a lot of lessons for today. And there are even some that I think tied into the last election. So you can see where there's a little more here than just singing and dancing on a yellow brick road.
Okay.
But you will, by the way, look for those things because they do have the rights to put in the Wizard of Oz characters.
Okay.
There are references. You'll see a yellow brick road. You will also see some of those ones who were skipping down the road, but you've got to look quickly. And those who have kind of done a deep dive on it said, look at the shadows. Shadows are very informative.
That's kind of fun.
So those are people to look for. But I was not disappointed that I spent 3 hours last night looking at it. I was enthralled.
Now, do you recall the movie? It's a little bit more recent. 2013, it looks like. Oz the Great and Powerful with James Franco, Mila Kunis, Michelle Williams. You remember that one?
I probably went to it, but notice how it stuck. And it's just taking another aspect and showing how somebody, you know, is more important to the story. I do think that, you know, what doesn't line up with Wicked and The Wizard of Oz is that they make Oz really powerful. And if you may remember in The Wizard of Oz, he was kind of a huckster. He was a dog and pony show kind of guy with his... Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I do think they go a little more with it, but You're in for a pound, you're in for a penny.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, the Oz, the Great and Powerful was interesting, because I think the James Franco character in that one was more in line with the original, where he was kind of, he was running a carnival in Kansas, and it was like, you know, that kind of, huckster kind of person, and ended up kind of becoming larger than life once he landed in Oz. So,
here,
Walt Disney, right. Basically.
So here's just kind of, you know, as we wrap up here. So my daughters, we watch a lot of movies together. They're actually in a thing right now where they've got to do some studying for an English language arts thing, and they're doing film critiques and criticisms and whatnot. So we've been watching a lot of movies lately. One of my daughters is very much into sci-fi type things. So, you know, this is the one that watches a lot of Star Wars with me. And she's a reader. Now, she tried reading Lord of the Rings and stopped because she hated the book. And I know a lot of people actually hate the book, not necessarily fond of the book, but the movies they like a lot more. So we started watching Lord of the Rings. Now, we took a little twist with this. And instead of watching the original versions by Peter Jackson, we're going to the director cuts, like the extended versions. I did not realize how long these were. They're each of them are about 4 hours long. The second, we just finished up the Two Towers, and the end credits were 15 minutes. It was insane how long these are.
I hate.
Oh,
it's too. And they don't get anywhere. They're just walking. Yeah. Yeah. It's and you know, they're doing, that's a series now too, again. And they love to remake things. I think a lot of times is when they come out of the copyright infringement, or if they can get a fee or whatever, they'll remake something. So yeah, be ready.
So that we've been watching that. We've been very, very, very deep dive.
When you go to Wicked, look to see how many times you think they're kind of drawing on Harry Potter.
Okay.
There's no Harry Potter influence, even though that never was intentional.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we're hoping to maybe get to it around Thanksgiving, maybe that little break. Definitely on the list to see soon. And some more movies are on their way. You know, we already had our first big Christmas movie of the season hit with thanks to The Rock. We're getting some action movies, and he's bringing the fans back to the seats. So a lot going on right now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again for listening. And we will be back again next week with another episode of Streamed and Screened.